This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Dying to Tell, bringing to life conversations about death and dying. If you're dying to know, we are dying to tell on Joy 94.9.
Pink is the color of my true love's hair.
In November last year, I attended the launch of a report on the future of death and aging released by Portable, a Melbourne-based team of researchers, designers and developers. And for the first time in 10 years of attending end-of-life and death care events, I wasn't the youngest in the room. In fact, I was one of the oldest. So how have Portable managed to engage a young, diverse community in death and ageing? And what have they discovered in putting together this extensive report? Joining me in this studio are Peter Roper and Bonnie Graham from Portable. Welcome to Joy and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thanks.
So let's begin with some introductions. Peter, can you explain Portable, the company, and some of the important work that Portable has done in the past, and what your role there is and your involvement with this report?
Portable is an agency that seeks out areas of policy failure and social need and tries to help in various different ways through using design and technology. What that means is we work with clients, many in the public sector, like government agencies, as well as not-for-profit organisations, to do a whole range of things, and that might include user research, user experience design, web design, service design, development in the technical sense, implementing websites and apps and all sorts of things, as well as then maintaining those assets over time. How that links, I guess, to what we're talking about today is that we identify areas where there's a lot of potential in terms of improving the experience for citizens and users. And when we say citizens, we just mean regular people. So we're not working with clients who, you know, go after certain areas of the market because they're more profitable. We're talking about services for everyday people that are living in Australia. So our research into death and aging really builds upon or adds another area to our research and development portfolio, I guess you'd call it at this point. In previous years, we've done research and developed various solutions or ideas in spaces such as access to justice, and we now do a lot of work with various clients in the public sector in that. We look at bureaucracy and how public sector, public servants can innovate within bureaucratic environments. We've looked at infrastructure, future of work, and this is all part of a really strong research and development initiative or ongoing arm of Portable where we don't get bound by what we've done in the past. We go forward into areas that we think we can make a big impact in and just start exploring. And so this research into death and aging started from off our own bat. It was not with a client saying, "Hey, we have a project in a certain area." It was very much off our own bat, and has grown from there. My role is business affairs lead, and I work on a range of different things within the business. But what's really great about the research and development work we do, and especially in death and aging, is that it brought in a lot of people from all over the company with various skill sets, from strategy to design to development, who just had some interest in the space.
And Bonnie, what about you?
So I'm a design strategist at Portable, so I very much work in the beginning of projects, looking at researching the landscape of the problem, understanding the problem deeply, and making sure that we're focusing on the right problem and making sure we're working towards a solution for the right area of the need. I guess getting involved with the research and development project at Portable, it's great because people come from every team, every discipline within the studio, but in particular death and aging, it's something that everybody has an experience with or will at some point in their life. So it was pretty engaging across the whole studio, which was really exciting.
And, you know, I mentioned in my opening words that I'm particularly interested in how you connected with a younger, more diverse community than what I normally see at events in this space. Perhaps you can talk about a little bit about some of the events and how you brought people in. I mean, obviously you are a fairly young and dynamic and diverse group within the office, from what I've seen. How did you engage in a wider community, and how did you get young people, you know, to start talking about death?
I think it's to do with the fact that prior to starting this research, and this started late 2017, but prior to doing this, we weren't known in this space. This is not, death and aging is not what you would associate with Portable until we started doing this research project. And so we have an existing audience of people that are, you know, like-minded and interested in using design and technology to tackle, you know, a whole range of different areas of social need. But what we found is that the people who came forward, they didn't see us doing stuff and go, oh yeah, that's something I'm interested in. Some did, but many people were already working in the space. So it's interesting to see, I guess, the silos that pop up. And so we had lots of people who were already interested in death and aging and were younger than me, you know, maybe doing an arts PhD and got into it, or were in public sector, or were in medicine, or whatever it may have been.
And Bonnie, maybe you can talk a little bit to some of the specific events, because they were quite interesting what you were doing.
Yeah, definitely. I think something that really blew us away was that we opened up this can of worms of talking about death and aging to a wider audience, that you didn't have to be older or you didn't have to be dying. And we just found this hugely engaged audience. So this kind of perceived taboo around the subject was kind of broken down even for us as we started out into the project. So we began with a bunch of desktop research, and then we did what we do best and threw out some research to the public to do some user testing. So we got people in to do a survey based around your ideal death. So we called it the Limbo Survey, and it was a concept basically that you, we got people to come into the studio, we put on some cocktails aptly themed to the death and aging night, we put on some bossa nova and tropicala kind of themes, and really tried to change the mood of the conversation around death and aging, which was really great. And then we asked people to engage with this survey that we'd written, which was kind of set in a tangible future, and your consciousness has been preserved, but in a way the only thing that's been erased is how you died. So we wanted people to rewrite what their memory would be of their ideal death, and it was amazing. Once we asked these people to engage with this survey, that, I mean, we were a few, you know, people had had cocktails, we'd had some music, and the room just went silent and everybody just engaged with this survey. It was fantastic.
And some of the quotes from that survey are in this report, and they are fantastic.
Absolutely.
Reading some of the responses that you got are really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, really moving.
Yeah,
and there's so many more we wish we could share.
Yeah.
More,
yeah.
But the report got long enough as it is that we had to leave some out. But it's amazing that when you frame it in a really positive way, and perhaps the hypothetical element it very much helped as well. But people who may not be super eager to talk about it have a lot of thoughts nonetheless, even if not something they had a chance to bring up before.
And I think too, creating a safe space, a place where people are eating and drinking, and it's, you know, there's no pressure, it is just a kind of a social environment in a, you know, your office is a very, very nice place to come anyway, so it's not like walking into a funeral home and being asked to do something like that. It's very different.
That's right.
Isn't it?
Lying to rest the cliches and platitudes and bringing to life conversations on death and dying. We are Dying to Tell on Joy 94.9.
Well, who were some of the experts that you interviewed? I mean, obviously they're people, you know, from the community that have been engaged and been brought in, but what about the experts that you were interviewed for this report?
There was a whole heap of one-on-one interviews with various people. So we spoke to medical professionals, from palliative care experts to GPs, also, you know, another end of the spectrum or whatever you want to call it, to people working in artistic fields, which was quite interesting in terms of the future of death specifically around the alternate burials and things. Some great help from there's a death team at the University of Melbourne. Michael Arnold specifically opened our event that you referred to before.
And we've had Michael in here. We interviewed him last year.
Great.
Yes.
Who else? Also, people working in the public sector. And there's a lot that deal with this because, you know, if you just think about someone dies, there's a thousand government agencies, not to mention the commercial sector, that need to know about it. One of the interesting things and one of the solution areas that could do with a lot of help is in making that smoother for the people dealing with the accounts and assets of someone close to them that's died.
In the report, it states that you've spoken with people from 18 right through to 85. Mm. What are the sensitivities of talking with an 18-year-old as compared with an 85-year-old?
Something that really surfaced through the research was that death is a very intimate affair. And whilst there was lots of engagement to talk about the topic, people wanted to be a part of the conversation and be a part of the services or solutions that may come out of these types of needs, because everybody had a specific idea or need that they would like to have input on it being addressed through whatever the outcome was of this research, which was really interesting. But in terms of sensitivities,
yeah, it does relate to some of the other work we've done at Portable, and we've done a lot of work in the youth mental health space. Creating those spaces was definitely a big consideration for this project. Funnily enough, we were probably overly cautious at the beginning about how sensitive we should be. But having said that, you know, nobody that came along was surprised about the content. People knew what they were getting into, and so there was help on hand if anyone needed to step out or needed to talk to someone.
Yeah, I think that was important. We were conscious of creating a safe space to have this discussion. So if at any point someone needed to tap out, there was a couch and probably a cocktail waiting.
And I guess this leads me into my next question about the language that you used in the report. I mean, I noticed there are no euphemisms and there are very few clichés. Who actually wrote the report, and how difficult was it to find that balance between pragmatism and sensitivity to the subject matter?
It was a group effort to write the report. So Bonnie and I were two of the main authors, but there was two others, Ryan and Sarah, and a whole heap of other people contributed to it as well. It wasn't as difficult as you might think. I personally and at Portable were very big proponents of plain language and accessibility for a wide audience, and so we don't like BS basically. If there's a simpler way to say something, a shorter word to use, we'll use it. And I think that's very important here. As Bonnie mentioned before, there's no target market for this. And for a lot of the work we do, it needs to be accessible to literally everyone. Everyone is an end user in death. Unsurprisingly, a lot of other things as well in terms of government services.
Well, I found the report very easy to read, and it's very nice to look at too, with the layout and the colours and the format. Throughout the report runs the story of Bernie and Sam. Can you explain a little bit about this story and how important this thread was to the report?
Mm-hmm. Mm. So I guess Bernie and Sam came out of a bunch of research where we identified it's not only the person that may be facing death that is a key user or character in this kind of narrative, but actually the people around them that are supporting them or are very close to the person that is dying. So initially we had a user A and a user B, which is very sterile and cold. So we thought this is something that people experience in a range of ways, and it's a very personal thing that they experience. So we decided to write the report in a different way and create a narrative where it was actually you could identify and empathize with all these emotions, all these tasks, all these decisions that both Bernie and Sam were faced throughout the entire experience, because it's not something that is just straightforward or a procedure like other things that we've researched. So it was a way to kind of engage you to really feel and come along with the ride with Bernie and Sam. And we also tried to make it, I guess, non-gender biased, so that you could insert yourself into the story. So you might be Bernie or you might also be Sam.
And Bernie and Sam could be either or.
That's right.
Either or, you know.
Any cultural background. That was actually the hardest thing about the writing of the report was
yes,
keeping the language and references to Bernie and Sam
That's right.
gender neutral, because everyone that worked on it had their own, I guess, first perception of who, like Bernie was a man, Sam was a woman.
See, Bernie could be Bernadette too.
Exactly. Totally. Which, and that's, and, you know, that's the point.
Yeah, it was very
there
clever. Was,
there are no gendered pronouns in the report at all. In bringing the story of two people, you know, even though they're conglomerates of many different people to life, is that it draws on and brings to life something that we do focus on as a core part of what we do at Portable, and that's bringing the user out and bringing the voice of the user out. And so in any report, whether it's our own project or a client project, quotes from real people, bringing that to the front through the stories of Bernie and Sam was a really important way for us to complement the other parts of the report that may be more, I guess, reporty, or however you want to describe it, more like typical report style writing. And there are sections of the report like that, but we, for the purposes of what we do, it was essential to really bring it down to the individual level.
Did any of the Portable team members have any reservations about working in this space?
Yes. There were some staff that had some sensitivities to it, and I guess that's what's the beauty of the research and development projects, is that it's an opt-in process. So everybody that worked on the process, on the project, volunteered to be involved, and there was at any time you can tap out if you need to, or if your schedule is, you know, overwhelmed. People were tapping in and tapping out, tapping in again throughout the entire project. But it was something, as much as we were conscious of creating a safe environment for people that we invited in to have these conversations, it was also echoed throughout the studio. So,
and how do you feel, Bonnie, having worked in the space?
It's been really enlightening, actually. I didn't realise until we started digging into this topic that I had unconsciously just accepted a taboo around the topic. And so once we started to talk about it, I started to understand how natural it is a part of life, yet it's not talked about or celebrated as much as the other end, which is birth. You know, we have birth plans, and we know, we plan, we research, and we discuss and celebrate these things. But then on the other end of the spectrum, there's not the same kind of conversations happening.
It was a very rewarding process to go through and project to work on, and it's only just beginning, actually. We've got a whole tranche of things we want to do over the next, you know, year and into the future as well. But yes, it's certainly increased my death literacy and made me realize how we are and can be consumers in the experience, and we're not just stuck with the defaults just because, you know, people don't know about it and haven't learned about it. So one of our big, you know, wishes for this report is to help people just, I guess, realize that there are choices to be made, and they do have power as consumers. And, you know, perhaps it's blunt to talk about it in terms of dollar and market power, but if we want an industry to change, or any industries to change, that's actually a really powerful way to do it.
Was that one of the aims? Were you hoping to make change within?
No. I mean, to say there were aims at the start is specific aims is a bit generous. It was actually just identified as an area we wanted to explore, and using, you know, the framework that we have as designers, and using human-centered design.
I was going to say, your timing is kind of interesting with the Royal Commission into aged care quality and safety just about to begin, obviously, on the 8th of February, and you're releasing this at the end of last year. I mean, what hopes do you have for legislative change through that?
From our point of view, what we hope to come out of it is, I guess, the recognition that, like, death is never going to be a great experience, obviously, but that doesn't mean it can't be better for equally for the person who's dying, but also the person close to them who has to deal with all the stuff. And there's a lot of stuff to deal with, you know, not including grief and having lost someone after someone has passed. And it's a nightmare.
I think, you know, from what I see, that's the hardest thing, is that oftentimes it is a one-off experience, and by the time people get to the other side, the carer or the child or, you know, the partner or whoever it is that is going through this process, they just want to be done and never have to think about it again. Mm. So there's not that follow through that is required to really generate serious change, because people put it down and think, oh, thank God that's done. You know, like, yeah. I hope I never have to do that again.
Well, yeah, thankfully not many people get practice at it, which yeah. is a good thing, but also for sharing knowledge, it's not a,
no, it's not a good thing. It's a, yeah. it's a really tough thing to generate change.
Mm.
So what is now on the to-do list for Portable in the space of death and ageing?
You know, through this, and there's actually, we're making revisions to the report at the moment, but in the revised one, there's a page or maybe two pages of basically just acknowledging all the things that this report, or a report titled The Future of Death and Ageing, could have covered but didn't. And so it's something like 80 pages already on its own. It could be thousands and thousands of pages, because there are so many things we couldn't have got to or couldn't have included, just because we have gone insane or never got around.
Death is so
never
vast.
Got around to
it's so
it is vast.
Right.
But for us, it's we have and part of the report showcases a few of the concepts of apps that we showcased at that research and development demo night that you attended, Stephanie, and taking some of those further based on the feedback we got and ongoing feedback with we've started a reference group. If anyone wants to get involved, we have a reference group that we're hoping we can meet up with quite regularly throughout this year to take some of those concepts further, because at that point, by the time we'd published a report, they were concepts. We never designed anything in isolation without talking to real users, so that user participation will be what drives those forward, and we're pretty excited about that. General wishes from the report that we mentioned in it, and that is just to increase and encourage death literacy and thinking about the issues earlier. And I mean, that's the biggest challenge, I think, in that like most people die without a will, yet most deaths are expected. That tells us how hard it is to get people to actually think about, have conversations and take action when they still can. And so, I mean, some of our ideas for services or products address or go some way towards addressing that problem. But there's so many others, and there's so much opportunity in this space. And I think that's the exciting thing. But yeah, it's daunting, but very exciting.
Yeah. And Bonnie, finally, how can people access this report, and why is it important that they read it?
I think it's important to read it because you're going to die at some point. And the sooner that you can, become death literate, which was one thing that we were hoping to even just start the conversation through the report about, understanding what are your options, or having the conversation with your loved ones, what are your decisions and are they known? So you can access it through the Portable website, portable.com.au, and also if you want to be involved with the reference group, flick us an email at death@portable.com.au. We'd love to hear from you. Please get involved. We encourage everyone's an end user, including ourselves, so the more the merrier, really.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.